Hello everyone, welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce and this is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode of the podcast, I'm joined by ACS Chief Executive James Lohman.
Hello.
And ACS Head of Public Affairs Ed Woodall.
Hello.
To talk about what an upcoming election means for the convenience sector. Now, first things first, over the last couple of weeks, there have been lots of dates rumoured for a general election. Based on the latest information we have, Ed, when is the election scheduled to take place and what other important dates are there in the meantime?
So based on the latest information, subject to some legislation going through the House of Lords, the general election is going to take place on Thursday, the 12th of December. So okay. That's looking pretty likely that will be the final date.
And that's the first December election we've had for a long time.
First December election since 1923.
Wow, okay.
So a very, very long time. Obviously not a particularly popular time for election because it's dark and it's cold and people don't want to turn out for those things. But nonetheless, we are going to have one on the 12th of December. Other key dates around that, well, Parliament closes. There will be no more MPs from next Wednesday, the 6th of November, and we'll start going into the full election campaign from then on. So Parliament closes 25 days, so we've got 6 weeks to talk about the issues.
So with previous prorogations and with the planned downtime now, of course, that means there are some bills that were making their way through Parliament that have now either had to been scrapped, will be changed or reintroduced. Are any of these relevant to local shops?
Well, the main one, I suppose, is the Environment Bill, which is featured in the Queen's Speech, and that contains a number of things that are of particular interest. Introduction of the Deposit Return Scheme in England, Wales and Northern Ireland, and extended to producer responsibility, which might be known better by some of the listeners of this podcast as packaging waste regulations, and really changes that system, which could actually result in a better system, we think, but we still have to see whether that is the outcome of that. They've consulted on this. And then carrier bag charging, which is something we talked about a lot. So actually some good things in that Environment Bill. We know the deposit return scheme presents a lot of challenges as well, and certainly the way that scheme is developing in Scotland, presents a lot of very practical
issues. Yeah, just on Scotland very quickly, we heard when Gove was Environment Secretary that he was very keen to align Scottish and English Welsh regulations. That then gives us some very tight timescales if that's going to take place, doesn't it?
Yeah, certainly in terms of introduction, that would. So Scotland wants to introduce early in 2021. So it seems very unlikely I can't see how we'd be able to develop a scheme before then. But then I suppose the decision the Westminster government would have is, do you align with the Scotland scheme so they mirror each other exactly, or do you have a different scheme? Now, having a different scheme in England, Wales, Northern Ireland compared to Scotland would produce some real issues in terms of the packs that are being produced, the markings on those packs, a lot of really significant border issues. You know, these will really matter. So we want to have one UK-wide scheme. It wasn't the scheme that's been developed in Scotland,
sure.
Because we've done separate podcasts in the 7 week, but you know it doesn't to our mind work particularly well for retailers, and particularly the Scottish government have said that they want it to be cost neutral for retailers. And in fact, I was at the SGF conference last week in Glasgow. Nicola Sturgeon, First Minister, spoke at that and reiterated that the scheme should be cost neutral for retailers. The way the scheme is currently being devised, it is not going to be cost neutral for retailers. So there's a circle that needs to be squared there. It's going to be
really tough. So the impact of this is something that is very complicated, very difficult to get all the details through, and something that is very clearly something that we shouldn't be rushing. But it looks like the timescales are tightening on this. There are other things, of course. Business rates is one where the change is quite simple, but feels like it's been taken off the floor of the House.
Yeah, so there was a rating bill going through the House of Commons which would have shortened the revaluation period for business rates. So it would have been 3 years instead of 5 years that your rates bill is reviewed.
Which is something we'd been calling for a long time ago.
Yeah, a really positive intervention, which means bills more closely aligned with what's going on in the economy, which would be a really positive step. Unfortunately, that has fallen and is not planning to come back at this stage, which obviously we've been calling for that for quite some time. So hopefully the next government will be able to look at that again.
And with all of these things, when they are taken off, however far they get, they basically have to start again. So new debates, new amendments, new, you know, everything has to start from scratch.
Yes, everything starts from scratch. And of course, drawing it back to the election, it really depends on the strength of the next government we have to reflect how strong their legislative agenda can be. Because there's one thing having a legislative agenda, and there's another thing trying to deliver it through the parliament as well. So all eyes on the election to see how much of a majority you get, which will then reflect how much of a strong legislative agenda and things like the environment bill and the rating bill that you can bring back through.
Yeah, and so once we're officially into election season, when Parliament's been dissolved, it's likely the retailers will be seeing a bit more of the candidates in their area, not least because, as we say all the time, convenience stores are community hubs, so getting on the right side of retailers is always an important part of any campaign. One of the best ways to engage with candidates ahead of the election and talk about both local and national issues is to organise a store visit. What are the benefits of doing this now?
So, well, great benefits. I mean, the people have been released from the corridors of power and they'll be walking down a street past your shop. So it's worth having a word with them to talk to them about your business, how it operates, and how the decisions that they make in Westminster impact your store. And it's pretty basic, straightforward stuff. Tell them how your business runs. Tell them the challenges that your local community is facing and let them talk and see what goes on in your store on a day-to-day basis, because they keep that in their head. They go back to Westminster and then they think, well, actually, before I make this decision, before I vote on this, actually, I've got to reflect on what that actually means on the ground in my community.
I'm always quite anxious about giving lots of advice about store visits, because actually the advice is speak about what you know, talk honestly. You know, it, in a way, it has to be a natural process, a natural conversation with someone, just like you're talking to anyone about your business and about the community. That's the conversation you need to have with your MP and all the candidates in the election. So,
and at the moment, we talk about the balance of power between retailers and candidates, or MPs as they were. This period of time, that balance of power has quite significantly shifted in favour of the retailer.
Yes, I mean, so most constituencies there are, 70 or so, 70 to 80 convenience stores in most constituencies. The sector as a whole employs 405,000 people. Doesn't mean, of course, that everyone working in the convenience store is going to vote, certainly the way we tell them to vote, or the way that their employer is going to tell them to vote. But we're an important touch point. You know, we're a very significant constituency within their constituencies, if you see what I mean. So, you know, there is a real opportunity. And what's more, you know, the issues that we're facing, we are often the only business facility in a village, in a housing estate, in a secondary area, or we're part of a fairly small unit of businesses. Those are really, really important. And of course, we think this if you work for ACS, but I mean, it's self-evidently true that if those stores and those facilities weren't there, that would make that community poorer. So you should go into those conversations, not in a sort of arrogant way, but in pretty self-confident about the value that you're bringing to that community and that you are an important stakeholder in that community.
Because the thousands of customers you're going to see after that will be saying, oh, what do you think of X candidate? And your opinion will be very, very important in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Ed, we've got some other information about running store visits that you filmed in one of the last elections that we covered. are there any things, apart from just the messaging, that retailers should be aware of when organising a store visit with the candidates?
Well, as I said before, I think it's about keeping it real about how your day-to-day operations work. I think inviting them in, offering them a cup of tea, introducing them to your staff so that they can see them and see how they interact with your business would be a key thing to do.
Yeah, that's a really important thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, because they are the people ultimately talking to customers, facing customers. And I always think it's really great taking them to the back of the store to show them how the operations of the store works and show them how little space you have to operate and show them, and sort of demystify the business in a way. People don't sometimes understand how these things work. So taking them in and doing that is sort of a key thing. Key bits as well is also making sure you get a picture of the candidate there, tweeting it out or putting it on whatever social media you have, and also we can help you send it to the local paper as well, because it's about your profile in the community. You know, they're visiting you for a reason because you're an important stakeholder, so let's shout about that. Let's be confident about the role we perform in the community.
Absolutely.
If there's one message I think often doesn't come across, despite, you know, we lay this on really, really thick, but I still think it doesn't always come across very easily, is about the investments that local shops make. You know, and I think that we have our investment tracker, we can come up with a big number, but when you're in the store with a candidate, to explain to them, well, you know, we fitted those new fridges, that's how much that costs, there's new flooring here, there's a new till system, and I think I always see in stores, I remember a visit down in Portsmouth, Rav Garcher had a store down there, and Penny Mordaunt, who's not on the front bench anymore, but a very senior MP, you could see that when he was talking about the investments in the business, that's when, you know, she really switched on. Because I think there's still, I'm not saying specifically for her, But I think a lot of MPs, a lot of people, think that what we do is, you know, we buy and sell chocolate bars, we buy and sell, which obviously we do, that's part of our business. But it's about the investments you made, creating the environment, creating facilities for that local community. And that that message, you know, you can't really say enough. And everyone has made significant investments in their businesses.
Yeah. And as we know about the sources of those investments, don't underestimate the fact that you are taking a personal risk, a personal
Absolutely,
leap of faith.
Yeah.
It's not just something that is underwritten by a bank. It's, you know, a lot of this is from own reserves, and you know, that entrepreneurial spirit, the candidates will want to hear about that.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
And use it and reflect on it when they go back to Parliament. We've done stories with Nicky Morgan, who's chair of the Treasury Select Committee now, you know, Cabinet Minister, Dominic Raab, who's a Foreign Affairs Secretary and Brexit Secretary previously. So it really does make a difference into their sort of perspective on local economies and businesses.
Yeah. And so one of the key milestones as we go through this election period is the publication of each party's manifesto. And this is a chance for the party to set out their commitments if they were to form government. Where do you think the parties will differ on their manifesto pledges, not just on Brexit, which of course will be front and centre, but also in other areas relevant to our sector?
Yeah, in every single way, probably. I think this is going to be one of the most polarised elections.
And how much of that difference will be genuine rather than just for the sake of saying something else?
Yeah, I think there are really genuine differences. I mean, we wait to see them. But you know, the Labour Party leadership currently would like to nationalise some industries. They would want to shepherd in a really radically different form of politics and really radical economic reform. So, you know, that's very, very significant. Equally, Boris Johnson's Conservative Party, you know, are trying to strike out on an agenda which differentiates them from Theresa May's leadership, from David Cameron's leadership. And what's interesting is that probably far less emphasis on fiscal prudence and tackling the deficit and so on, and maybe a bit more emphasis on some of the things that are really important to us, like things like crime, policing numbers, you know, 20,000 police on the street. It's a nice headline. There's a debate about whether that's just replacing people who police who were there, how quickly can you get to those extra 20,000.
Yeah, so
but, you know, generally on those issues, those have been things where you've probably got more traction historically in the last few years with Labour MPs who've been talking about those challenges, but the Conservative Party are likely to include some very strong pledges in that manifesto.
Yeah, that 20,000 police officers is definitely going to be a challenge. I heard quite recently that in addition to those 20,000, they have to replace another 5,000 or 6,000 that are going to be going anyway.
Yeah.
And about 1 in 10 applicants gets a job in the police. So they're going to need best part of 250,000 people to apply for the police in the next few years. So that's a significant challenge.
And it's not the whole of the story either. I mean, and more police on the street, yeah, absolutely, that's something we fully support. But what our research and the work we've done has shown is a lot of it's about the court system where we deal with offenders. A lot of it's about the information sharing between businesses and the police. It's not just a numbers game.
Yeah. But of course, none of that detail, I think, will play out in a significant way in the election campaign. Actually, I think for both of the parties, it's going to be about message discipline, how long they can stay on their individual lines about, you know, being tough on crime and also being on the side of the NHS. I think the NHS is going to be, again, another sort of key battleground in this election, as reflected in PMQs today, when Jeremy Corbyn sort of talking about, you know, Brexit and Donald Trump trade deal that impacts
sure.
on the NHS, and the government having to, or Boris Johnson having to counter that in some way.
So do you think the manifestos will be strong on commitment but light on detail?
Well, at the last election, we saw a Labour manifesto that was very detailed and had some economic backing to it, and then a Conservative one that was very light and very short. And actually, I think they'll probably play out in quite a similar way again, because you've got this sort of, you know, incumbent versus others trying to come in. So there's a benefit in having all that detail in one place. So I think the Conservatives will be quite light on detail and heavy on message.
Right. So we're not drafting the manifestos ourselves. But if we were, what would a local shop manifesto look like if we're pitching to all the candidates?
Well, I think continuing that conversation theme around crime and the issues around crime and violence against people in store is sort of a number one priority. We know that the trends are growing, and we know that the issues around policing provision and justice is a real challenge. So I think number one in there for us is talking about that and how we help protect people and communities from violence. I think around other issues is around cost and control of cost, which is a big challenge, whether that's around employment costs in the business and how we sustain our current levels of employment. and perhaps try and mitigate some of those big commitments the government are making around national living wage. You know, we've seen the Chancellor commit to a £10.50 national living wage by 2024. That is a big jump in a short space of time.
Yeah. And that's not something that a Labour government would do less than, is it? I mean, they would be
it would be day one of a Jeremy Corbyn-led Labour government to introduce that. So some big challenges there.
Yeah, I think the employment cost thing is really important. And obviously, what we've noticed around this, there are some things on maybe on crime, on business rates, where both parties are falling over themselves to say things that our members might want to hear. There's a big question about what it's something to deliver on that. This goes across all sides. It's the opposite is true on employment costs. It's obviously come this sort of auctioning up the national living wage rate. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, make up a number, and it feels like buying votes with other people's money, specifically our members' money, which is a real challenge. And Ed's talked about exactly, you know, mitigation of those costs is going to be an important part of this. But I think something else I'd like to see is a bit more concrete action or detailed proposals around the way the labour market is changing. Because we actually, our research, our colleague survey, and all the other work we've done, we've got a really good story to tell about the people who work in our sector. You know, we provide local, flexible on both sides, secure work for 405,000 people. You know, we're a great employer as a sector. And we are increasingly competing against, or certainly at the margins competing against, businesses who do not have, they are not flexible. So the flexibility is only on one side, the gig economy jobs. They are certainly not secure jobs. And many of them are very inconvenient for people to access rather than those local jobs that we offer. And so I'd hope that, you know, we will, during this campaign, we'll hear pledges around national living wage, and that will trouble us because we know the impact it has on members. But deeper than that, I want to see an acknowledgement of those different working models and support for responsible employment models such as those in our sector.
Sure. And I guess a final question from me, which is, if you were to make a prediction, now I'm not going to say who you would say would be forming a government, but do you think any government is getting an outright majority as a result of this election?
I think it's a really challenging one to call. All general elections are really hard to call. So, but since Theresa May left and Boris Johnson took over, the polling has just gone completely erratic, and both parties are being not just nibbled away out of the edges by the likes of the Liberal Democrats or the Brexit Party. The fully, you know, big chunk of their vote is being carved out, and the capacity to deliver a majority requires on quite big jumps in new voters changing their voting preferences, not based on party alignment, but based probably more around Leave or Remain. And I still think, you know, that's quite a big jump, particularly for the Conservatives to deliver a significant number of seats in the northeast of England to account for what they'll lose in, say, Scotland, is a big challenge. So I think that we could be on a road to either a very, very small majority government or certainly a hung parliament again, which doesn't bode well for certainty and clarity around Brexit in the future.
And James, if you could lock in your sweepstake pick.
Well, if you'd asked me on the morning of the 2017 general election, I think my prediction was a 90-seat Conservative majority. So the main message is don't listen to anything I say, because I don't know anything. I think what's interesting, also interesting, another thing everyone got wrong about that election, it was billed as being, this is the Brexit election. And it wasn't. I mean, we talking to MPs who were elected in that campaign, or re-elected in that election, they were saying, look, out on the doorstep, people were not talking about Brexit really at all, or certainly wasn't the main issue they talked about. Now, I think this will be more of a Brexit election, but I would take from that, don't assume this election is all about Brexit to the voters. Don't assume, if the message, which I think is probably true, and we've heard a lot about, is, oh yeah, you know, people are just sick of Brexit, you know, they're sick of talking about, they're not going to want to talk about in the election campaign as much, are they? So, of course, Brexit's going to be a massive issue, but I don't accept that it's going to be totally overwhelming priority for all voters. Is the first thing. The second sort of contradiction on this is that I would say, and where we sat here and in my office, I've got an election map, and I was about the constituencies, and this colour, obviously red, blue, green, and various shades of yellow. Anyway, and the point is, I think you'll see very different dynamics in different parts of the country. So I think London will be the issue there is what will happen to the Labour vote in London versus the Lib Dems. And what will happen to the Tory vote in London? Will that completely collapse? We regard London as being, or London's Remain, and of course overall London is very strongly Remain, but there are plenty of constituencies that aren't strongly Remain, particularly in outer London. So how that's going to play out, I think, will be very interesting. So, and then you've got, you know, to Scotland, everyone's assuming the SNP will more or less sweep Scotland, but they did in 2010. So, get my elections confused now. So, but that may not happen, but you know, that everyone's assuming that. And then you've got these more outlying areas that voted quite strongly Leave, but that may have other factors that may play against Conservatives. So Cornwall, North East, places like that. We'll have to see. So to some extent, it's all regional, but equally last time and every election, you see a general trend and a movement that actually goes across everywhere. And what will that general trend and movement be? I don't know. But my sense, having got it wrong last time, my sense it will probably be actually a result not that dissimilar to 2017 would be my opening guess.
And of course, it will depend around the dynamics and the nature of the campaign and how, if it gets particularly angry and particularly polarised, and that affects how much people are paying attention and when they start paying attention. I think voting intentions are decided probably in the last week around the election campaign, so it all depends around that sort of timing and dynamic of the campaign as well.
And do you think there will be any inanimate objects that make a huge difference? So we've had limestone tablets and bacon sandwiches. What do we think will be?
Well, that's always the ones to watch out for. Is the
single-use cups, I think, is one to watch out for.
Exactly. Yeah. I think there is that thing about, you know, events. So, you know, I remember way back when John Prescott punched someone, you know, and that was, yeah, you know, there are going to be some random, unexpected events that will have an influence, you know, on the campaign.
We can, of course, keep up for the ACS weekly briefing.
Yes, of course, briefing. Yeah. So thanks to both James and Ed for joining me on this episode. We will be back with more discussion in the coming weeks as the manifestos emerge and the election twists and turns start to unfold. One last thing for retailers to start thinking about now, actually, is whether they should do anything extra or different in store on polling day itself, 12th of December. There are over 40,000 polling stations across the UK, which tallies pretty well with the number of convenience stores that are serving consumers. When we talk about convenience stores having a reach into every community, those numbers being comparable definitely backs that up. So on the day, there will likely be quite a lot more people around. So who knows, maybe it's an opportunity to reach some new customers and to do a bit more for existing customers. Now, as Ed mentioned, you can keep up to date with the latest information about the election, through our weekly election briefing email, as well as online via social media or on our website at acs.org.uk.